Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler. My guest today is Robert Maripole, and Robert is going to discuss a book that was written about his mother, Ethel Rosenberg. So, Robert, it's always good to talk to you. Tell us the name of the book and the author and the theme of the book.
Okay. The name of the book is Ethel Rosenberg, An American Tragedy, and it's written by Anne Seba, who is a British historical biographer. You know, it's kind of a little bit strange to think of my parents' case as a historical case, but the way it works these days, if something is over 50 years old, it's considered historical. I want to explain that even though my last name is Maripole, I was born Robert Rosenberg. I am the younger son of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, who were executed by the United States government on June 19, 1953, when I was 6 years old, after being convicted of the charge of conspiracy to commit espionage. Now, while that was the official charge, the way it was known in the public mind was the theft of the secret of the atomic bomb. And in some ways, it was kind of the biggest case of the early 1950s. It was headline news in the United States and all around the world. And my parents were always sort of glom together as a unit, the Rosenbergs. But whenever someone would be asked, well, what did the Rosenbergs do? They always talked about what Julius did. And my mother, Ethel, was kind of disappeared. And Anne Seba set out to write a book that put her front and center.
And, you know, reading the book, your mother had, like, so much potential as far as, like, a singing career. She loved to sing, and you know, she married your father, and it became, she became, like, back in the 50s, it was a housewife and mother. So tell us a little bit about her aspirations to be a singer. I think that was really, really special.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the way the case was presented was, you know, Ethel was kind of this dumpy housewife who was just, you know, going along following whatever her husband did. And what was missed was any sort of discussion of who she was as a person. And one of the things you discover about my mother very early on was that she was born in 1915. And so she came of age, you know, she was when the Depression started in the Great Depression started in 1929, the crash of 29, she was 14 years old. And by the time Franklin Roosevelt took office in the early 1930s, she was 17, and throughout the 30s, she sort of came of age, became a young adult. And having to survive in that kind of situation, born in poverty on the Lower East Side of New York, she came from a very typical, in some ways typical family, but in some ways atypical family. One of the things about Jewish immigrant families that's very common was putting a premium on education. And yet neither of her parents were particularly interested in education. And in particular, her mother felt that a girl didn't need to have any education. She needed to get married and have children. And so Ethel, who was an extraordinary student, she actually graduated high school at the age of 15, and had these academic and artistic aspirations. She wanted to get out of the Lower East Side ghetto. She wanted to get out of the common roles of wife and mother and develop a singing and / acting career. And it turned out that she had an extraordinary voice. Her voice was so good that when at high school, when the upper class people had assemblies, they would actually call her out when she was in the 9th and 10th grade, even younger than 15 when she graduated. She would be called to sing the national anthem at high school assemblies. And ultimately, she applied to the chorus that sang in Carnegie Hall as its younger member. She applied twice. The first time she was denied entry, not because of her voice, but because she couldn't read music. She'd never been taught. So she taught herself to read music and then applied again and was accepted and was probably the youngest singer in that chorus. But then when the chorus toured the country, she didn't have any money. She couldn't join them, so she had to drop out. So her aspirations, that's another way her aspirations were denied. But that's, you know, she then went on. She would sing at union meetings, and that's how she ended up meeting my father, singing at a union meeting that he also attended. So that's kind of the story of her aborted singing career. But one of the things that it highlights, and you see this throughout her growing up years, is her dogged determination to improve her lot and improve herself.
What I found so unfortunate about it, and it I don't know if it's still the case amongst the younger people, but back in the 40s, 50s, maybe even 60s, you know, women were not regarded as full-fledged human beings. I hate to put it in those terms, but men were dominant in those days. Mm-hmm. And your mother had wonderful skills, but yet she was not regarded by her family as aspiring to singing or anything. She was treated like a second-class citizen. Would you agree with that assessment?
Oh, well, I think that that's absolutely true, and it's one of the reasons. There's kind of an interesting story behind my brother and my agreement to cooperate with Ann Seba in doing her biography. That it's kind of a funny story because we first found out about this not by Ann Seba communicating with us, but the fact that a press release was issued by her British and American publishers at St. Martin's Press in the United States, stating that award-winning New York Times best-selling author Ann Seba was, you know, had just gotten a substantial advance to write a biography of Ethel Rosenberg. And my brother mm-hmm. and I had some sort of internet alert on the name Rosenberg. When I saw that, I called up my brother and said, "You ever hear of this person? What is this about? How can they do this without even talking to us?" So that the relationship kind of started off on the wrong foot, and Anne quickly got in touch with us and apologized and said, "Look, you know, the publisher wasn't supposed to do that. That was a premature announcement. I wanted to be in touch with you first because, of course, I couldn't do this without your involvement." Now, of course, we're not talking about an authorized biography or anything like that. You know, we had no say over the content of what she wrote. But we either, you know, we could have said, no, we're not going to talk to you. Even with her explanation, I was somewhat skeptical. So I went out and I read three of her books. What I noticed, and the three books that I read, the first one was called That Woman, which was the story of Wallis Simpson, the American woman who caused King Edward of England to abdicate the throne so he could marry her. She was vilified for that, and Anne Seba wrote a biography of her, and then Anne Seba wrote a biography of a book called American Jenny, which was the story of Winston Churchill's mother, Jenny Jerome, who was also vilified as a very bad mother. The third book I read of hers was called La Parisienne, about how French women survived the Nazi occupation of Paris. And in reading all of these books, I saw a feminist perspective. I saw someone who was very interested in dealing with the fact that women were treated as second-class citizens and were, you know, and there were special conditions and double standards applied to their behavior. And after reading those, and I've always felt that the same thing was true of my mother, that there was a feminist story in my mother's case that had largely been ignored. So I said to my brother, after reading this book, so I thought this is the right person to write this story. And I haven't been disappointed with what she has produced, because I think it's really the first biography of my mother, not that there have been all that many, that does her life justice. That's how we became involved, and that's why I think, even though I don't necessarily agree with everything that Anne has written, I think it's very well written, it's very well researched, and all of her conclusions are quite reasonable.
So, you know, you were quite young when your mother was arrested. You were three, and then she was executed when you were six. And mm-hmm. you and your brother Michael would visit your parents at the prison. Not a lot, but you guys would go. Do you remember at all your mother's love of singing?
You know, I really don't, and it's one of the mysteries of that I've. I mean. You know, one of the things that I find with Anne Seba's book is, because I was so young and have so few memories, her book is like a gift to me of my mother's life. I've learned so much about who my mother was just from reading this. And one of the things that's always been mysterious to me is, you know, what did her voice sound like? I can remember visiting them in prison. I remember the process of visiting them and going into this dark, forbidding place and then being in this sort of upstairs room with windows that looked out over the river. And I remember that the visits, which probably there were about a dozen of them, were sort of these calm affairs. My parents wanted to recreate as normal a situation as possible, and that's what I wanted. So that, you know, you could say, they fooled me to some degree, and I wanted to be fooled, but I can't recall what their voices sound like. And I've often wondered when I hear about my mother's singing voice, that I kind of have a sort of soft spot for high-pitched female singing voices. I always like hearing that kind of music. And that kind of sound. And I kind of wonder if that comes from the fact that, you know, my mother probably sang me to sleep at night. And probably subliminally, I remember, I have some sort of memory of that. And it reverberates, it echoes in the kind of singing voices that I find particularly soothing and captivating. But how real this is, I really don't know. And that's, you know, that's part of the difficulties of having parents who you know and remember sort of, but from so long ago that your memory is extremely sketchy.
So there was no recording whatsoever of your mother singing?
I can't answer that question. I think there actually someone could have a recording somewhere of her singing. I am just not aware of it. I don't think Anne in all her research actually came across that. So perhaps there is something somewhere, but I don't know of it.
So you said you had mentioned to me that this book was written from a feminist perspective. Now, there were a couple of other books written about your mother and your parents. Why do you think Anne's book differs from other things that have been written?
Well, I think because if you look there's several genres of books about my parents. One are the kind of investigative journalist nonfiction books, you know, and those are focused entirely on the case, guilt or innocence, and what we've learned about the case. And so who my parents were kind of, you know, in the background. It was, you know, there'd be a few pages describing their early life. So it was, again, they were extremely sketchy. And even then, there was a book, a personal book, written by Virginia Gardner, way back in the 1950s. That was basically a book that turned my parents into saints. It was called The Rosenberg Story. And it just made them out to be these perfect, loving individuals and all. It was propaganda, basically. I mean, it did reveal something of my parents' lives, but it was so slanted that I don't think it really gave much of an insight into who Ethel was. You know, I think that and then there was another book written called the Ethel Rosenberg Beyond the Myths, which was written by a therapist whose entire analysis was based on the fact that my mother had a bad relationship with her mother, and therefore my mother was a kind of, her acting was a phony act to get away from her childhood, and she was so despised. She was despised as a person, and she never really got over that. And so what you have is two portraits of my mother, one that kind of makes her out to be a saint, and the other that makes her out to be a kind of neurotic victim. And I think neither of them were particularly accurate. And as I say, this is the first biography that does my mother justice. But those are all the purported nonfiction books. There are also all these fictionalizations of my mother, my parents' case, probably the most famous being the Book of Daniel by E.L. Doctorow. And, you know, in those books are all fiction. And artists, you know, use their imagination to portray my mother in one way or another. But they're fictional. It's interesting the way people sometimes read fiction and they don't realize they're reading fiction. Like in the Book of Daniel, for instance, which is the story of Daniel Isaacson, who's the son of the Isaacsons who were executed for stealing the secret of the atomic bomb. It's pretty obvious what the book's all about, but the names are changed. And one of the things that's changed in the Isaacsons is that, unlike the Rosenbergs, the Isaacsons had a son and a daughter, as opposed to having two sons. And in the book of Daniel, the younger sibling, the daughter, kills herself. And my brother's had instances where people have come up to him and asked him how his sister's doing. Now, you know, that's nutty on so many levels because, well, if her sister kills herself, she's not doing very well. So, and two, he doesn't have a sister. So, you know, the fiction in people's minds replaces the reality. So I don't put much stock in the fictionalizations. They reflect the culture. I mean, I think that Tony Kushner's play Angels in America, in which my mother is a major character, is absolutely brilliant. But it's still not who she was. You know, it's a fictionalization. So when you look at the entire range of material produced about my parents' lives, I think Anne Seba's book stands out as unique in that it is probably the most realistic portrayal of who she was by far that we have seen to date.
You know, you and I have been talking for a few years now. I had read a book, Killing the Rosenbergs, and I was telling my friend Russell how good it was, and he says, well, why don't you see if you could contact, you know, the Sons, and, you know, I found your email address, I emailed you, and then you answered, and we've been talking ever since, and I find it very difficult to talk to you about this. When you read a book about your mother, an article about your dad, what's that like? Because everybody reads books, you know, history books and biographies, but you have a family tie to it. When you read something like Anne Seba's book, do you read it like anybody else would read it, or is there something about reading about your parents that people are unaware of?
Well, I hate to say it, but I kind of dreaded reading it. The reason I dreaded reading it is because I know the story and it doesn't end well. And it doesn't feel good to read that story, you know, to read a tragedy that's not only a tragedy in general, but is one that's a personal tragedy. And yet I feel obligated to read it, both to find the information and because I feel, you know, I've spent a good portion of my life responding to my parents' case. It has kind of dominated a good portion of my life, and I've accepted that, and I've chosen to use that in founding and then directing the Rosenberg Fund for Children until I retired 8 years ago. And so I put myself in a position to be kind of a lightning rod for information about the Rosenberg case, and so I can't neglect reading something like this, but it is painful enough that, you know, I find myself dreading to read it because, you know, it just brings back a very sad time. That said, Cynthia, the thing that's different about me as opposed to many other people reading it is that because this all happened when I was so young, and because it all happened so long ago, and because I have dealt with it for so long, I have come to terms with it, and I'm used to it. And one of the things that it sparks in me is the realization that I'm not alone in this, okay? That any public figure who becomes connected to a culturally iconic event that generates literature about their experiences. Any of that is going to create a circumstance in which individuals who have personal connections to stories are going to read about themselves. So every time you read a book that talks about a political figure or that talks about a major, you know, some sort of major public event that involves individuals, and those individuals are talked about in the book, I realize that them reading it are going to have the same kind of reaction I do, that all of a sudden something of that's very personal to me is out there in a very public manner. And that's, so there are thousands of people all over the world who experience just the kind of thing that you experience, that I experience when I read it. And there are people like you who wonder, you know, what that's like. And I don't know how to describe it except to say if you're kind of inside it, it is an odd experience. And
Robert?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know if you were still here. So
no, I'm here. I just...
Our time is just about up. Would you, would you mind giving a plug for Anne's book?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, again, I want to say that I think it's a book that will be illuminating. I think it's very well researched. It's very well written. It's called Ethel Rosenberg, An American Tragedy. It's published by St. Martin's Press. It came out in June. I'm sure you can find it. I always urge people to go to their local independent bookstore to find it and to avoid using Amazon if at all possible. And I know that it's, you know, people, there are some people who are still reluctant to go into stores, especially with what's going on with the Delta variant. But most local bookstores will do curbside pickup. So I really urge people, I think they won't be disappointed if they get this book.
Thank you, Robert. You've been listening to Robert Maripol, who has been talking about the book, about Ethel Rosenberg, who is Robert's mother. I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. If you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Robert, it's always great talking to you, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.
Thank you for having me.